during the last live show where we discussed Formula One business, that was last week, in fact, we were talking about the fact that we were not watching Formula One live.
Yep.
And for the first time this year, we didn't watch Formula One live. We only caught the highlights of the race, but I enjoyed it just as much. The only thing I missed from watching the BBC highlights instead of the Sky live coverage was the side podcast comments. And I think that is a big loss to us, because we do enjoy the interactive, the community feel of a live event. But we're going to have to do it again this weekend, because there's another Sky race. There's another weekend when we can't watch live F1.
Yeah, I did wonder if, because we were only watching the BBC highlights, we missed out on some of the lower battles that, you know, can take up space, whereas in highlights, you only really saw the stuff happening at the front.
Mm.
But because I only saw the highlights, I didn't know if there were any. Perhaps there was only action at the front. It's hard to say unless you've seen both sides of it. But I guess if we're doing it again this weekend, we'll be able to see if it feels like that again. Then it probably is that we're only seeing the important stuff.
Mm, okay.
So it does feel like missing out a little bit. Like, I don't remember seeing much of some of the lower drivers who would come into the pits and you wouldn't even know about it, sort of thing.
Yes. So the smaller stories, the lesser stories you were missing out on. I did miss out on your Fat Bike Fat Box.
Yeah, I missed doing it, but it's I probably could do it with the limited coverage that we have, but because of the delay, it just means I get very confused with what's happening on the live timing screen and what I'm seeing.
It's very hard, because live timing, so the Sky coverage for us is 60 seconds to 90 seconds behind, and that's a lap. So that means you're watching something and you just compare where that driver is on the live timing and find he's overtaking somebody or he's coming to the pits in that lap.
Yeah.
And that's in Formula One, 90 seconds is a chasm of delay.
It just gets very confusing.
This is why we cannot live with Sky. I just cannot cope with it. It's so depressing to follow Sky coverage using their online access. It's just impossible. It ruins Formula One for me. And so I don't think you can do the Fat by Fat Box very well in that situation.
No. So we relied on the BBC highlights, which were very good. I mean, they covered everything that you needed to know. I don't feel like we missed out on any important information. And also, I tried to see how far I could get without being spoiled with the result, knowing who won. I mean, I wasn't worried if I did find out, but I thought it would be a fun experiment to see how far I could get without knowing the result. And I got within half an hour of the highlights programme starting on the BBC. And then a Pirelli press release came into my inbox and I got a little preview of it that said who the winner was. I was so annoyed.
The thing is,
the problems of being a blogger.
I don't mind I don't mind being spoiled. There is no intention of switching off I'm not going to put my life on hold and avoid the internet in order to not be spoiled by it. So I do think we just have to accept that it's going to be the case. What I really liked about knowing the result is, prior to watching the race, we knew that, I think from the Williams press release, that Pastor Maldonado finished 18th. And at one point mid-race, he was running in the points. And we were like, well, what happened to this guy? How could he possibly have dropped so far down the order? Something serious must have happened to him. But no, he just got slower and slower and slower. And apparently he picked up, he picked up the debris, didn't he? We spied the guy, three cars past this piece of debris on the road. In comes Pastor Maldonado, feet first, smashes through a piece of carbon fiber. That gets caught in his car and slows him down.
Yeah, he ruined his own race, really. Although, I guess whoever put the carbon fiber there in the first place ruined it. But he was the only one of that train of cars that didn't manage to avoid it. So,
if it wasn't for Pastor Maldonado, I'm sure that piece of car would have stayed in that position on the racetrack for the remainder of the race. It was obvious and everybody was driving around it except for him.
In the race, McLaren, who have previously been quite rubbish at the whole pit stop business, they did one of the fastest pit stops the world has ever seen. It was literally blink and you'll miss it. It was so fast that Jenson Button, who was in the car for the said pit stop, said he wasn't ready for it. He didn't think they'd finish that quickly.
What was the time? Was it 2.6 or 2.8 seconds?
I think it was 2.6.
Now we have got to this stage where a Formula One pit stop is so fast that it's too quick for the driver to react to it. Can we please say, this isn't working now? I know that nobody wants to bring back refueling. I understand that we like it and nobody else does. But the thing that refueling brought you was time to comprehend a pit stop. You could see the car. You could figure out when a mistake was going to be made. It was slow enough to understand it. You could watch multiple cars having their pit stops whilst they were being refueled. So if we can't bring back refueling, can we not do what they do in sports cars and limit the number of people working on a Formula One car? It's nice that we've hit this record. Yeah, I'm really chuffed that Formula One is the fastest thing ever at changing four wheels.
Yeah.
As if anyone else really cares about, you know, that figure. But now can we reduce the number of mechanics down to like two people working on it at any one time so that they can run around the car and change the wheels individually? Or can we just do something else to slow it down to something more reasonable, like 8 or 9 seconds?
That's
now?
That's an interesting point, because it would be better for us to be able to actually see what's going on rather than it going by in a complete flash of colour and blur and nonsense. I haven't finished.
Oh.
And also, if there are less people, because when Kobayashi ran over his whole pit crew, one of the coverage teams went in there afterwards and was like, well, they don't have very much room here. So if there are less people, then it may be that there's more room to manoeuvre, there's more room for error. It just might be a little bit safer.
It's absolute. You cannot argue with the fact that if there are less people in the pits, the less people will get injured when something goes wrong. And that's, if nothing else is a good enough reason to make that change, then that is. But it's just been pointed out in the comments that the pit stop was 2.4 seconds. It's such a short time. I don't even care. Who sits around going, do you know what? I wonder what the fastest sports car pit stop ever was.
A world record.
I don't care. It's too quick. It's silly.
It's one of those things that...
8 or 9 second stops. I don't care how you do it, although I wouldn't mind if it was if bringing back refueling was... the decided answer. Please do something to make them more comprehensible. Because what happens in 2.6 seconds? What can you do in that
2.4 seconds.
I don't care. What can you do in sub 3 seconds?
We're getting this message that you don't care. But it is one of those numbers that is, it's like completely so fast, it's not comprehensible. Like the numbers that are so big, so vast, they're not comprehensible. Mm. We need something in between.
9 seconds was fine. I just want to go back to that, please, now. I thought it was silly when they were announcing... I mean, when refueling was banned originally, teams were banding around 2.5-second pit stops as times they were aiming for. And it's taken them, whatever it is, two and a half years, 3 years to get to that level. Now they've got there. Please, can we do something else?
I think the first race we watched that didn't have refueling in, I was like, these pit stops are so quick, I have no idea what's going on. Little did I know...
Yes, it was going to get worse.
Yeah.
Pat agrees with us in the comments. They should force teams to reduce the number of mechanics at a pit stop. They do it in sports car. It works really well at Le Mans. Two guys run around a car, do all four corners, off the car goes. Brilliant. Loads of time to understand what's going on. If one guy makes a mistake, and there's enough variables involved in that someone could mess it up.
It's a lot of pressure on the one guy, but that's what Formula One is all
Formula
about.
Formula One is all about pressure. It still keeps it a team sport, but you just don't need so many crew in there doing this, because I can't. You can't watch four corners at once. You can't see the guys moving. It's just a blur. It's silly.
The other thing that happened last weekend, which actually occurred before the race, and I thought was all my fault because I predicted Vettel for the win, if we all remember, they almost got disqualified.
Yeah. Oh, I see. Yeah, that happened too.
I thought that might be a little bit of my bad luck rubbing off there.
Okay.
The whole team almost couldn't race.
And this must have happened after our last Feet Up Friday. So we haven't talked about this at all, because it was announced Sunday morning, was it? This came to light Sunday morning. And this is the FIA were doing their usual regular checks on the cars. And they looked at the Red Bull torque mapping and decided that this is unusual. This doesn't look like information we've had previously in the season. Now, I don't know, and I haven't. No one's been specific about at what point the FIA took the original measurement for comparison. So I don't know if Red Bull have had this for several races or whether it was something they simply brought to Germany. But even though that it's now been it's been banned and the FIA said this is not within the spirit of the regulations, therefore we're changing the regulations, doesn't seem to have bothered Vettel at all. He said the car feels exactly the same this weekend.
Yeah. I mean, it seems a bit of a coincidence that it came straight after their win, because Webber won the race and then this happened. But then again, they haven't seemed crazy dominant like they were last time this sort of thing occurred.
Yeah. There was that dominant run in Valencia that never was, because the engine blew up. And that, I don't know whether it goes back that far.
Could be.
No one's being clear, because it could have been right at the very beginning of the season that the FIA took this measurement. They only said it doesn't match what we saw at some point previously this year. So I don't know. Maybe we will see that they suffer. Maybe there was a secret loophole they discovered and they found some performance. I love F1 engineers, though. They will find and eke performance out of anything.
Yeah.
And what they were doing was ingenious. I don't know how they were doing what they were doing, but they were remapping the throttle position to basically blow more exhaust gases through the rear of the car and to give themselves more downforce, which is amazing. The thought process that went into that. It's useless. It's useless beyond Formula One. No car company would ever do that. No one could ever make use of that technology outside of Formula One. It exists solely to make that Red Bull car go faster. But I love that they put that much thought and effort in time and energy into it.
Red Bull do seem to be particularly good at the moment, or the last few years, at working those regulations to the limit.
Adrian Newey gets a lot of credit. Now, I don't know how much he could possibly, how much involvement he could possibly have in engine mapping. Somebody else in Red Bull must be doing equally good work as Adrian Newey. And the team don't seem to be keen to name him, lest they ever lose them.
Well, yeah.
Him or her, of course. It could be anybody within the team. I don't know who it is, but there's a lot of engine mapping inventiveness coming from that team, because they were the first to run the overrun on the diffuser, and they went to Renault and they made sure they created that, and then other teams copied it. So someone in that, well, many people in Milton Keynes are doing some incredible work at Red Bull.
Away from the racetrack, Lewis Hamilton has made headlines again this week, but he did some amazing work on Twitter over the last race weekend, because I think we mentioned that it was his 100th Grand Prix, and he was quite excited about that. He tweeted essentially everything from when he woke up in the morning, had breakfast, everything he was doing. Every 5 minutes there was another tweet, another picture on the driver parade. It was really quite incredible stuff. Not while he was in the car, obviously, but
I am impressed. For a while, well, since Fernando Alonso has joined Twitter, I think he's set a new benchmark. For a period, Kamui Kobayashi was the man to follow on Twitter, and then he lost his phone. And since then, he hasn't really been the same since. Then Fernando Alonso came along. He set a new benchmark. And it felt like Lewis had sort of given up. It was very sporadic and intermittent and not very exciting to follow the guy on Twitter. And then this week he really came alive. He embraced the concept. He's got a new profile picture, which might be the first update since he joined the social network, and he's been providing all sorts of insight, loads of behind the scenes updates and plenty of photographs, lots of people he's been hanging out with. How do you put it politely, he did send some divisive tweets about a certain rap star, and then had to backtrack and spent an afternoon defending himself for his comments.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't actually backtrack that much. He was sort of explaining himself more than anything, which is actually, I have mixed feelings about that, because it wasn't the best tweet in the world. But equally, if you're going to say something, stand by it, I guess.
I was worried that the negative feedback he got from that set of tweets would have put him off again.
Yeah.
Because he's only just got into it. He just embraced Twitter, and within 3 days he'd put his foot in it and the word was against him again. But thankfully it hasn't put him off. And he's still tweeting today. He's doing lots and lots of fine updates. One thing that caught my attention, which was maybe on Wednesday, Lewis was hanging out on some film set and tweeting how much fun he was having. And you noticed a couple of drivers sort of said, busy getting ready for the race. Here I am at the track, preparing.
Working
lots
hard.
Of prep work going on. Intermittently, sort of. I think they may have, I assume they're following Lewis, and I assume they were sort of suggesting that perhaps he might want to focus his attention on Sunday, as they were. And it just seemed like a subtle, I don't know if it was a dig or just maybe a hint to say, hey, you've got something to do this weekend. But either way, the guy is he's reaching out to fans. He's bringing everybody who follows him closer to Formula One, and it's really good to see.
Talking of people perhaps not concentrating on their day job, Natalie Pinkham got married last weekend. Congratulations. So she was.
Say it like you mean it.
Yep. So she wasn't on the coverage, and she took Georgie Thompson with her. So that is two Sky employees off for the weekend to get married. No, that doesn't make sense. Not to each other. No. But
that would have been awesome.
Yeah. At a wedding.
And this is the same Natalie Pinkham, who we were, was it last year, we were mocking and having a dig at because she took a weekend off of Formula One presenting to go to her friend's wedding. So yeah. In two seasons, the girl has skipped two races to go to church.
Yeah.
I don't think she's really dedicated to this, to what she does, you know?
The thing is...
She's not taking it seriously.
Well, you know, weddings are important to some people, and that's fine. But the thing is, the people in the comments, they were trying to give her credit for delaying her honeymoon to be at this race this weekend. When I just think that actually, perhaps you could have delayed the whole wedding by 2 weeks, and you would have been fine. You would have been in the summer break, and no one would have had to have any time off.
There is an almighty four-week summer break coming up when there is no Formula One action. Nobody is doing anything for 4 weekends. The engines will be turned off and everybody will take it easy. That is an almighty target to aim for when you're planning your wedding if you happen to work in Formula One.
Yeah, I mean, it just always brings me back to Martin Brundle taking that summer off all the time.
Always had a summer holiday in Hungary.
Yep.
Ridiculous. If you're a Formula One presenter, you know... ahead of signing up at the beginning of the season what your commitments will need to be, and you should do your very, very best.
It's the best job in the world. Why wouldn't you want to do it?
I can sort of excuse Jake Humphrey because he's not doing Formula One presenting, he's doing the Olympics, and that's better. And if you're going up in the world,
well, it's bigger.
Well, for his career, sorry, I didn't mean that to Formula One fans. That's controversial.
Yeah.
I've already upset someone. That's what I meant. If you're Jake Humphrey and you're a sports presenter, for your career path, presenting the Olympics, it's a massive challenge. It's going to reach far more people than Formula One. It's probably going to make him, as a BBC presenter, it's the chance of a lifetime. This is never going to happen again in his lifetime. So I can sort of forgive that. To take 2 weekends off, 1 year after the other, to go to first your friend's wedding and then your own wedding, which you planned on that very weekend, to me, is cheeky.
In the comments, Jay Pankhurst has said they may have had to schedule the wedding too far in advance and not have known the F1 schedule, which is a good point, but there is a summer break every year around the same time.
Has been for as long as we've been doing Formula One. We've been covering Formula One for what, 5 years, 6 years? And I think every August has been a summer break.
But we are just a grumpy old married couple already. So.
Also, well, yes, but you're not presenting Formula One. You still managed to plan your wedding around
weird.
You cancelled... your first wedding plans.
My first wedding.
Our first wedding, in order to watch the Chinese Grand Prix. And then you scheduled your actual wedding around that break. So I don't think it's not that difficult. The other thing is that there is the off season every single year. And so far as I can recall, maybe for the last 25, 30 years, every December, every January, there's always time. You can go to a nice sunny destination the other side of the world.
Difficult
and get married.
To have a summer wedding in December, but
you can on a beach somewhere else. You don't have to get married in this country. Whatever. It just, to me, it seems like you're not taking your job seriously.
Like I said before, congratulations. Natalie is back this weekend. It is the Hungarian Grand Prix. We've had free practice already. McLaren seem to be doing quite well, although they've always, or for the last few weekends, they've shown well on a Friday and it hasn't always translated in the race. But hopefully, I mean, I'm hoping Button can do some good things. He had a good showing in Germany.
The McLaren's new aero package worked wonders there. And time will tell whether or not it's something that will help them in all circuits. Hungaroring is a different track. It's more twisty. It's more dusty. I don't know whether or not they might affect the tyres and the way they work the tyres. But on Friday, Lewis Hamilton sits at the top of the timesheet. So it's not, thus far, it's not a bad upgrade. I'm liking seeing Jenson Button back on the podium after being, 16th and 18th in the previous races. He's by far and away having the most bipolar of seasons.
Big improvement at the moment.
Yeah, a massive improvement, but that doesn't, you know, the next race, it could be all downhill.
Could be. Swings and roundabouts. Two drivers struggling so far this weekend, and obviously we have only had the two sessions. Romain Grosjean, I think he had about 3 seconds of free practice two before he was in the wall.
And it was he in the wall when it was dry as well? This is the worrying thing. And in Germany, he also had a pretty terrible race. Lost his nose at the within the first couple of laps.
Yep.
Spent the rest of the race playing catch up and never really made any improvement, despite that Lotus car being damn fast.
Yeah, I think in the last show I said I worried for him and perhaps his lack of experience in the wet, but Just lack of experience altogether, it seems.
The guy had a bad start to the season. He got it on track. He got the better of Kimi Raikkonen. It was looking good for him. Last few weekends, not working for the guy.
I think it's because you were so mean about Kimi a couple of shows ago.
Right.
Kimi's turned it round and remained.
Kimi's kicked it up a gear. Is that what happened?
Yeah. Maldonado had a bit of a wobble, but he didn't crash. So that is something to be said for so far this weekend. But Schumacher, when it did start raining in free practice two, he aquaplaned his Mercedes into the barrier. He just went straight on, missing a corner completely. And, you know, it happens. It's the rain and everything, except that he is supposed to be like the rain master.
Mm.
And also everyone on the Mercedes pit wall was not happy about it. They all looked particularly grumpy.
This follows, this comes 1 week after he knocked all four corners off of his car in Germany, in similar conditions. So for the guy who used to dominate everything in the wet, he hasn't got the Mercedes hooked up as well as perhaps he'd like to, which is unfortunate. But you know, he did fine. He did a great job in qualifying in Germany. In the end, he started the race in third position, finished the race in seventh position. That's not a bad showing. Maybe if he crashes his car on Friday, the weekend gets better for him. You know, the only way is up when you've trashed your car on a Friday.
Which leads me nicely on to the predictions for...
Who are you going to jinx this weekend?
I'm afraid it's actually going to be Michael Schumacher.
You're not.
Yep.
You mean Rasen? The guy just crashed his car.
Well,
leave him alone.
My jinx didn't particularly hurt Vettel.
No, of course it didn't. Weekend. It just lost him a podium position. Where did he end up? Fifth or something?
I didn't lose him that podium position.
His driving did. Yes. Fine. But your jinx probably coaxed him into that pass.
The jinx almost got him disqualified before the race had even started, but it didn't. See, I think the power is waning from the curse.
So what are you... Hold on a second, though. Are you predicting Michael Schumacher for the win in Hungary?
Yes.
Why?
Because I am.
Okay.
That's it.
Well, is there any logic to this thing, or are you just picking somebody you haven't picked for a while?
The thinking process is... I think Button is probably going to do very well.
Mm.
I don't particularly want to jinx Button. So I think we might get someone new because that would really tide us over into the summer break and keep it quite exciting, you know, if it was another new face. Not that he's new, but for this year, it would be a new face on the podium. And I thought, well, who else could do it? It could be Kimi, but I'm thinking they're not quite there yet. Maybe it would be Rosberg, who's not new. so then it has to be Schumacher.
I love this insight into your mind. Inside
this
the
is how
mind
my brain
of
works.
Christine. Okay, let me just pick that apart. Kimi Räikkönen definitely on an upswing after I said Vitaly Petrov was about as good as he was. So, you know, he's clearly doing that to prove me wrong. And therefore, could be a danger man in Hungary. I'm thinking that Kimi Räikkönen could do very well. I would love to see both Button and Hamilton up there because, was it last year when it rained and they had an epic, epic fight in Hungary, I think in 2011. That was one of the highlights of last season. I'd love them to have a rematch. Come rain or come shine, whatever, you know, I'd like to see both of those guys up there. Lewis had rotten luck in Hungary. Pretty much every single car ran through the debris in the second lap, and Lewis was the only guy to come out of that with a puncture, which is just massively unfortunate. So I would like to see Lewis Hamilton catch a break in Hungary and have a chance just to put what looks like a really fast McLaren on pole and go for a win. And I'd like Jensen to be right there with him, pushing him all the way. Fernando Alonso, he's had his time in the sun.
Well, I was just going to say in the comments, Will has said Fernando for the win because it would be his 31st victory on his 31st birthday.
That's too...
There's something poetic about that.
That just doesn't happen. That's fairy tale stuff. No, that's Hollywood script kind of... No, that can't happen. Plus, the guy keeps winning.
Yeah.
I know it's not a great car. I know that you just have to look at Felipe Massa to see exactly how well Fernando Alonso is driving. But what's that? You know, a pole and a win... And he's walking away. You know, he controls the race from the front. I'd like to see him fighting a bit.
Also, if someone else gets the victory, that keeps the championship nice and close. Mm. And that's what we want.
Mm. Yes. Interestingly, neither of us are particularly bothered about the Red Bull. So maybe we suspect that some of their pace has gone away.
So did you have a definitive driver you picked then?
For the win?
Yeah.
Lewis Hamilton.
Okay.
But I think Kimi Räikkönen has something of a spark, which I hadn't seen so far this season. I did. There were. I had to laugh at the Lotus Twitter this week. Were tweeting pictures of Kimi flying over a fence head first.
He did fall
he
down.
He tipped himself. I don't know what he was trying to do.
Just climb over the fence.
He was very, very keen to get away from the racetrack. Decided to jump over a fence, lost his balance, and went head first into the grass. Hilarious. Brilliant picture of Kimi actually doing a somersault. I love the photographer for getting that snap.
Yeah. Poor Kimi really can't get away with anything.
I really, really, really like that his own team are tweeting it. They're not denying it, and they're not saying, you know, it has been rumoured in certain, you may notice in certain press, sections of the press, that Kimi had a fall or anything like that. It's like, ha, here's our driver going head over feet and landing on his bum. That's Kimi.
This time yesterday, we were in that London.
London town.
Yeah.
Londres, baby.
Our capital city. Mm. We were there for the meetup where Amy came in from Australia and other people came in.
So did the rest of the world.
Other people came in from less far away. There were loads of people there. It was brilliant.
The pub was packed. And we should say thank you to the Coal Hole for reserving tables for us. It's a great venue. We had a great time. Much fun. And much discussion.
Lots of talking.
Was had by all. My only complaint about the whole evening is we utterly, utterly failed to include everybody who couldn't make it. We failed the comments and the live thread completely.
We opened up a live thread because we thought it was going to be better. They promised there was Wi-Fi at the Coal Hole, which is where we were.
There wasn't really.
There wasn't any Wi-Fi. And actually, I found the coverage to be worse than any time we've ever been there.
There were more people in London anyway, which makes internet connectivity a problem. I understand that with bringing in so many people from all across the globe, not just for a side podcast meetup, but you know, London is heaving right now, and that's putting a massive strain on the communications infrastructure. But I was desperately trying to find something to hold on to say, yeah, real life meetups don't exclude.
Didn't work.
Exactly the opposite happened the second we got there. Just switched off, and if you, I'm sorry if you were trying to follow or take in what was going on, we failed in every respect. But the people who were there, I mean, I think I managed to talk to everybody during the evening. There were so many faces and things to discuss, you know, so many names and people from Side Podcast past and the people we hadn't caught up with for 2 or 3 years, people who used to be in the comments aren't in the comments so much anymore. A lot of history to catch up on, and it was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it.
It was really very good, and thank you to everyone that came.
Indeed, we met lots of I'll tell you what my highlight of the evening was. We met lots of new people. And if you want Side Podcast to keep expanding and you know, you've got to reach and continually reach out to a new audience. And there were at least 4, maybe 5 new faces. Actually, even more than that. We may be into maybe 6 or 7 people never met before. Obviously, it felt like we instantly knew all of them because we knew them from the comments. But just lots and lots of people hadn't expected to arrive. Didn't know where they were going to be there. And it was a nice surprise to walk in and see people you'd never met before who'd made the effort. It was lovely. I really enjoyed it. I'm not doing another one, though. That's it. We are done.
We've talked about that. There are lots of people in London because of the Olympics. And it's worth saying that we are going to have live threads on the site for each day of the Olympics. Because people want to talk about it, and I want to talk about it, and I'm excited.
It's sport. It's a diverse and interesting sport, and we do like our live threads. It shouldn't get in the way of the Formula One things. If you come to Side Podcast for the Formula One, there will be plenty on Side Podcast over the summer break. I know Adam is planning what he's going to be writing for his column. There are other columnists. I think Ryan has plans for what he's going to be doing during the break. So there are lots. Keep an eye on the columns. I love the column so much. I cannot plug Side Podcast columnists anymore already. You know, every show I mention them, but I really, really like them. And there will be, if you're stuck for Formula One things to look at during the four week break, Side Podcast is going to have a lot of content to keep you excited and interested.
There was a good feature. It's worth just mentioning. Ryan posted a really interesting article about teams that didn't quite make it into F1 and teams that did and have been struggling since. So all sort of the new teams and what went into the picking of who gets in and who doesn't.
And that can be found on the Side Podcast homepage, top right. It's the first featured article if you go there right now. If you haven't read it, if you haven't taken the time, it's a lengthy article. So you might want to put aside a good 15, 20 minutes of your day to have a read. Somewhere between free practice 3 and qualifying would be a good time actually to to take in and digest that. I think it's a great piece of work, and Ryan's doing some fine writing. All of the columnists are great. They really are. Insanely good content. And I can't promote it enough. If you're not going to Side Podcast and checking on that homepage on the right, if you're not making sure you're keeping up with all of those, you are missing out.
I think that's all we have to talk about this week. It's been a bit of a quiet week news-wise in Formula One. I think everyone is heading from one race to the other, back-to-back races, you see.
That's I haven't what seen many F1 minutes from you
no,
in the past 5 days, young lady.
There have only been two, I think, that weren't race weekend related.
Two bits of relevant F1 news.
Disappointing.
Let's hope for more. Mind you, with the shutdown, it may be very quiet.
Yeah, it's going to be tricky, but I'm secretly quite looking forward to a bit of time to catch up with other non-race related things. But before that, we've got an amazing race this weekend. I'm sure it's going to be brilliant. And then I suspect we'll probably be back next week, and that will be 4 Feet Up Fridays in a row. We're really getting the hang of this podcasting business.
It's an addiction.